We are Low Rollers, small stakes and hot takes.
So let me just, on the last episode, I noticed you did this, and I just left it in because I didn't notice it in the moment. But you have changed our catchphrase from low stakes and hot takes to small stakes and hot takes.
Oh, did I really?
And you just did it again. So do you want to? Do we want to go? Do you prefer small stakes and hot takes? I think the key is we want to be consistent. So
I think small stakes because we're low rollers, low stakes and hot takes.
Oh,
we're low
right.
rollers, small stakes. And
maybe
hot
you
takes.
Have been saying it's small stakes all along, and I twisted it in my mind.
I think I have been saying.
Okay, all right, then we're good. Never mind. You don't need to re-say anything. I'll stop recording. Welcome to the Eagles Victory Parade Eve edition of Low Rollers, the weekly gambling industry podcast presented by CasinoReports.com. I'm Eric Raskin. I am joined by my co-host and compadre, Jeff Edelstein. Please give us a five-star rating on your podcast app of choice, and do it soon. When the giant asteroid collides with our planet, you're going to regret having procrastinated on rating Low Rollers.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, 2.3% chance, they say. I wrote about it. Gambling adjacent. Somehow
sure.
I made it.
There is almost no topic you can't find a way to tie in with gambling, Jeff. That's
yeah,
one thing I've learned about you.
I had a fun time writing that piece. It's over at Casino Reports about, yeah, the threat, the 2.3% of an asteroid, which nobody seems to be taking very seriously, but I am. Anyway, that's that. We got an interview coming up with Brett Smiley, who is our chief content officer. Is that what we call him?
That is his title. Yes, that's correct.
And I call him my friend, my boss, Brett Smiley. He's going to be talking about his wildly successful season in DFS Showdown, which I'm very jealous of. But before we get to that, as always, plenty of news to discuss.
Yeah, and for our top story this week, we're going to combine a few stories that all fall under the heading of developments in the world of non-traditional forms of gambling, either unregulated or not regulated by the states. So on the exchange wagering / prediction markets front, we have the news Wednesday that Trump has nominated a new CFTC chairman. It's Brian Quintenz, a former CFTC commissioner and, oh, by the way, a board member of Kalshi, which, no biggie, blatant conflicts of interest are so not a big deal anymore. Another related new item, Kalshi filed recently to offer new markets on single game outcomes, on player props, basically, you know, sports betting. Meanwhile, in the sweepstakes world, Connecticut has a bill to ban sweepstakes casinos, and so does Mississippi, where the bill to ban sweepstakes actually passed the Senate, and by a 44-1 vote, so not very close. Jeff, things are moving at breakneck speed. It's getting really hard to keep up with what unregulated or semi-regulated version of gambling is legal where. What's jumping out at you here?
Yeah, I mean, as I've said numerous times, this is, you know, this overall is the biggest, going to be the biggest gambling story of the year. What happens with all this stuff? I mean, it's interesting, you know, like in the race between, you know, these, you know, exchange betting, whatever you want to call them, and sweepstakes, it looks like, you know, sweepstakes is falling behind. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we're going to be talking about this with Brett, so I don't want to get dive too deep into the weeds here, but like, it's clear as day to me now that, like, Kalshi and Polymarket or, well, you know, whoever, you know, whatever legal ones exist are going to be allowed to offer these markets.
Yep.
That seems clear as day, right? Now, the question is, do people go to them or not? I'm sure people will. I'm sure people will in states where they're, you know, where it's not legal yet. Will I be going to them here in New Jersey? I mean, I don't know. I doubt it. But are you going to? Have you played around with this stuff at all yet?
I have no particular inclination to dabble in any of this, but it's almost like the story is not how big can it be. The story for now is the fact that they're allowed to do it, and what a slap in the face this is to all the various sports books that went through all the whole regulatory process, and there's just this back door that they're slipping through, and that, as you said, clearly they're going to be allowed to do it, that, you know, this guy Quintenz is going to give the green light to Kalshi to offer whatever they want to offer. There was a line in Dustin Gawker's newsletter that just Simple as this. President Donald Trump picked someone from Kalshi's board to run the agency that oversees Kalshi and other prediction markets. If you don't see the problem with that statement, I mean, it's clear where it's going, and it's clear that laws and rules and conflicts of interest and shame and things like that doesn't exist anymore. So, I'm with you on what's going to happen there. The sweeps thing is maybe a little more interesting to me right now, plus not necessarily something we'll talk as much about with Smiley. So, in general, it feels like the tide has really turned against sweeps. You know, not fully, not irreversibly, but it's not going in their direction. Their only recent quote unquote win was a friendly ruling in Florida, and that was a very muted win. It just their case moved to a state that's more advantageous for them. They didn't really win anything exactly. I looked at the Mississippi bill, and what's interesting is that they're looking to assess a $500 fine to the players. If you're caught gambling on a sweepstakes site, you can be fined, not just the operators or payment processors. Of course, it's much more if you're an operator. You can be fined up to $100,000 and do up to 10 years in prison and all that. So, but that's the story that maybe has, I guess, I shouldn't say it has my attention more than the exchange wagering thing, but I can wrap my mind around it a little more and keep up with it a little more easily than the exchange wagering thing. The fact that the tide really seems to have turned against sweepstakes, which 6 months ago, the explosion of sweepstakes was the biggest story in gambling.
Right. I guess sweeps is a little bit easier for like the lobbying arm of the DraftKings, FanDuel, whatever to tackle because, you know, they have their lobbyists in place in all the states and they, you know, they just have to go one by one, state by state and say, look at what these sweepstakes sites are doing. It's clearly, I guess, under the letter of the law, but you know, I mean, you know, we all know what's going on here, you know. So listen, I'm curious to see. I'm, you know, New Jersey is the only state that has a bill to regulate
Right.
sweepstakes. You
That'll
know, we'll
be
see. You know, I again, I did talk. I haven't written the story, and I haven't talked to the guy like enough to have a story written. But I talked to one guy who's like in the know, who says probably not, but maybe. You know, like maybe there's a
with regard
path.
to the New Jersey bill passing, you mean?
Yeah,
Okay.
that maybe there's a path for all this. But I think the more likely outcome is sweepstakes sites find themselves in, you know, hot water in most states before this is all over.
And I guess the big picture view of all this stuff is that people want to gamble, and if you're not going to give them all the legal regulated outlets to do it, then that just opens the door for
Yeah.
unregulated or regulated only by the CFTC or operating under strange loopholes in the rules and all that. That all these states that the handful that still haven't passed sports betting, but also all these states that haven't acted on online casino, you are not preventing your citizens from doing all this stuff. All you're doing is forcing them to do it in a way where you don't get to get any of the tax revenue.
Yep, very true.
Okay, the other story that's worth a quick conversation this week, we got to talk a little Super Bowl betting. The early numbers are interesting. Nevada sportsbooks won a record amount, $22.1 million, but that came on tremendously high hold, 14.6%, when the handle in Nevada was the lowest it's been in 4 years, back when we were still coming out of the pandemic. In other states, handle appears to be up. We don't have all the numbers yet. Hold was likely strong almost everywhere from what we're hearing. Jeff, any thoughts on this? Did you contribute to the outstanding hold that the sports books enjoyed, or did you do okay?
Oh no, I lost. I had a, you know, a few stupid parlays that you know didn't even come close to cashing. So yeah, you know, they got a few bucks from me. Yeah, I mean I would expect that they did well. I mean Barkley didn't score and Kelsey shit the bed and the Chiefs lost. So I think, you know, those I imagine those are three of the most bet items on the board, right? So yeah, I'm not surprised the books did well. It's interesting about Vegas. I know we're touching on this here. Is that like and we talked about this with Dave Sharapin last week. Is it possible that there's a little bit of like a gambling weariness and Vegas is like at ground zero for that? Like, I haven't been to Vegas since 1995. I don't like playing. I don't need a casino like that. I don't like casinos because I know myself and I know I'll just, you know, blow through
walk
entirely
out of there
too
with
much
nothing.
Money. Yeah, 100%. But I don't know. Like, nobody needs to go to Vegas anymore. There was a time when if you wanted to gamble or if you wanted to place a bet on sports, you had to go to Vegas. It was the only game in town. Now it's very clearly not. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. You know?
Right. I mean, there's all the non-gambling stuff to do in Vegas that still makes Vegas unique and an attraction. But to go ahead and promote an excellent story on our site by David McKee that people should check out called Fee and Loathing in Las Vegas, talking about how the fees, the hidden fees, the various upcharges that Vegas has been trying to milk every last penny out of people for in every way they can, and that it may be hitting a breaking point and that visitation is starting to drop off. I think, that's maybe a whole nother story that we can discuss on a future episode of the podcast, perhaps, but that it's not necessarily that people are over gambling or burn out on gambling or whatever. I think Vegas is starting to hurt itself with how incredibly expensive it is. Yeah. I've in the 30 years since you've last been there, I've probably been there about 100 times or so, always for work, always with someone else footing my bills. I think I've gone like on my own dime maybe once or twice in that span. So I don't, but I can see that, you know, you're given, when I was doing podcasting for Showtime, going to boxing events, and they give you like $100 a day per diem to cover my meals, and it's actually hard to stay under that. That's a problem. Yeah. It is just so expensive there. But just doubling back to the Super Bowl stuff, you're absolutely right that the reason the books cleaned up was Barkley and Kelce having bad games statistically, and so any SGPs or whatever, it was really hard to get there on an SGP because everyone was putting some overs from those guys in there. I was mostly avoiding betting. I didn't want any mixed rooting interests. All that I bet were a few boosts that were plus EV, and I had a few free bets to use. I did do one wacky touchdown scorer parlay in order to qualify for a promo. I had a parlay of Barkley first touchdown, Devontae Smith touchdown, and Xavier Worthy touchdown. I was trying to qualify for that longest touchdown special on DraftKings, and I did qualify thanks to Worthy. I got my $46 bonus bet, but looking back, even though that one died early because I needed Barkley to score the first touchdown, it's frustrating that it would have hit at 60-1 if it had been Barkley scoring the first touchdown instead of Hurts. But I am not going to complain, and betting was not really my key focus watching the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, it was a horrible game. I mean, can we just...
I loved it.
Well, you won.
You're absolutely right.
One exciting moment as far as I'm concerned. It was the third quarter when the Eagles got the ball up 24-0, expecting like to just feed Barkley, and they hit Smith for the bomb. That was exciting. You know, that was like the dagger. That was it.
The interception return touchdown earlier when it was still potentially a game. Didn't you find that exciting?
Well, I didn't have a lot of Eagles defense in DFS. We'll talk about that later.
Okay. But no, I had this conversation with an Eagles fan friend of mine. The day after, I had watched the YouTube cut of the highlights, and he was like rewatching the game, and we both kind of agreed like, this may be the last time we revisit the game. We're watching it this one more time, but it's not like the Nick Foles Super Bowl that we can watch those highlights over and over for years because it was such a great game. This was fun for an Eagles fan, terrible football game.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, is it Smiley time?
It's Smiley time.
Of all the chief content officers I've ever worked with, the man we're about to welcome onto the podcast, Brett Smiley, is my favorite. He founded the site Sports Handle. Jeff and I worked with him on that for several years. Now we've all migrated one by one to Third Planet and Casino Reports. He's coming off a tremendous football season playing DraftKings Showdown slate, so we're going to get his insights on that, among other things. Brett Smiley, welcome to Low Rollers.
What is up, fellas? What is this, episode 5 or 6?
Episode 6, yeah.
You know, I do have a bone to pick. I don't think I ever got credit for coining the podcast name. I've been quiet about
it
this whole time.
It was all you?
That was Smiley, yeah.
That's
Oh,
right.
well.
Now I'm remembering. You sent like a batch of a few options,
Yeah.
and that was the one that stood out to me. So, all right, Jeff gets credit for the tagline, low stakes and hot takes. You get credit for the name, and I'll figure out something to contribute at some point.
Well, I mean, to be fair, like, a little behind the scenes here, Eric does all the heavy lifting here. I'm just here for my, charm and good looks.
He does do most of the work, so we'll let him have that.
I was putting a little fake humility in there to set one of you guys up to praise me as the driving force. So, all right, good job, everyone. We will talk an industry topic or two shortly, but I want to start with a gambling strategy conversation of sorts. Smiley, you've had several big wins this DFS football season, almost all on showdowns, which for anyone who doesn't know, that's a single game fantasy contest. Don't give away all your secrets, but give away some. How did you do it? How did you have such good showdown results?
Yeah, let me tee that up by saying I, started playing DFS fairly early on, like 2013. I may have dabbled in Star Street or one of the early games, but gravitated to DraftKings fairly quickly, just like the format, maybe the aesthetics and all that. For the first few years, had no clue what I was doing. And then the whole Ethangate thing happened, and then they went through their own state by state regulatory crisis. I guess I'll yada 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 the rest and say that probably 3 4 years ago is when I started taking it more seriously, investing a bit more time checking projections, shout out Establish the Run. They're phenomenal. I have my routine. Of course, my time is more limited because I have two small human creatures at home. But yeah, I found my little niche in Showdown, which for anyone who hasn't dabbled is basically, it's based on one game. The universe of players is just one game, not only for standalone, but also, on full Sunday slates, you can find showdowns, maybe with fewer people, and you pick six players. One of them is your captain who earns, at least in DraftKings, 1.5 points, per statistical unit. And I think the main thing that somebody who wants to get into this needs to do is start with kind of a theory of the game. For example, Eagles absolutely annihilate the Chiefs and the defense is going to get on the board. Elliott's going to get some opportunities to kick, and I don't know, the Chiefs have some garbage time action. That's how you would have arrived at, I suppose, the winning lineup for the Super Bowl. But basically, yeah, come up with a theory of a game and derive your lineup from that.
So do you feel that it plays to some strength of yours by having just one game to focus on that somehow sort of the you're more diluted when you're like looking at a full slate, that this is something that specifically plays to your strengths, or was this past season's results a little bit of random variance that you did so much better in showdown than in full slate stuff?
I hope I have an edge. We're not going to know for another 7 months. I think in these showdown environments, I mean, typically there's one guy who's kind of off the radar who finds himself in the optimal lineups. One of the contests I wanted was, it was Rams receiver DeMarcus Robinson, who, I mean, a lot of DFS is finding and tracking usage and opportunities because typically, points are correlated with the opportunities had. So, maybe that's one element of it. I'm more willing to make picks that in retrospect might look crazy, like a game where everybody thought that Puka was going to go for, I don't know, 12 catches and 200 yards. I went with Captain Kyron Williams against a good run defense. I forget which team it was, because he was averaging like 20 or so carries a game. So, just little mini strategies like that. A willingness to avoid, some of the guys who are going to produce, but are they going to outproduce their salary? For example, last weekend Super Bowl that might have meant not choosing Saquon, and I don't think Saquon was in the optimal. I mean, there are a range of outcomes where he gets 22 carries and only 2.3 yards per carry. So, yeah, that would be it.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed to admit that I as my DFS season started out hot, that Thursday night game with the Chiefs and the Ravens, I won two showdown tournaments. Took home a few $1,000s there, but the lineups would have won me over $100,000 if I'd played in the big, the Millie Maker showdown slate, which I didn't. So, what are you going to do? Life goes on. And then the rest of my DFS season kind of like just, circled the toilet bowl for the rest of the year. So I'm not ashamed to admit, well, maybe I am ashamed to admit, I'm going to admit that with your first or second or third win, and I'd see the results on Slack, I'd be like, yeah, fucking A, smiley. Here you go, man. This is awesome. By the fourth, fifth, and sixth one, I was like, all right, cool. Enough already. How about me? Like, where's my big win? Why don't I get to celebrate? And then by the seventh or eighth, I was like, fuck this guy. Is that wrong?
No, you're not wrong, and you're right that what is the phrase? Comparison is the thief of joy. Because I felt the same way. I had this nice little season, a few wins, and then it was the Saturday slate, the Christmas slate. Cal Spears, our colleague and a partner at Third Planet, won $250,000 in one of those huge contests. Somehow he managed to, well, he multi, did the mass multi entry, and he came up with the winning lineup in the, I don't know, it was the Bills against somebody.
It was the Ravens again. Isaiah Likely, our
Yeah,
Third
oh
Planet
yeah.
MVP, who Isaiah
Captain
Likely won me
Likely.
in week one, right? No, but I'm happy. See, when Cal wins, I'm thrilled because Cal, Cal's running the show over
You see
here. The
some
more,
potential trickle down.
yeah, the more, yes, 100%. The more money Cal has, the better off we are, I'd have to say.
That's
As far as
true.
Smiley goes, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he'll buy us a hamburger one of these days for the big editorial meeting that never happened. But whatever. I am happy. I want to say now that the season's over, I'm happy. And although I am a little disappointed, Brett, 6 weeks we got UFL showdown coming. So I'll run you through the St. Louis Battlehawks, lineups and stuff if you need a little refresher on some UFL action.
We'll see if in 6 weeks I'm getting itchy for some more football DFS. I'll need the primer.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. UFL's fun, man. Every game's a single, one game at a time. It's nice.
So I have one more question for you on sort of the football and topic and your showdown success and all that. Sort of a would you rather, but there it's a good would you rather, not a bad would you rather, I
Kim
guess.
Kardashian.
That's not always the answer, Jeff.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Would you rather have all the money that you made this football season, or you have kind of a break-even season, but Saquon stays in New York and the Giants win the Super Bowl? Basically, I'm trying to measure which of us was the bigger winner this NFL season.
Oh man, that's tough because there is no universe in which the Giants are winning the Super Bowl with the roster. So I reject the premise of the question, and I don't
Come
know. It was
on,
a
go along with the hypothetical. Would you rather have another Super Bowl title or, be up however many thousands of dollars on the football season?
I think I would rather the Super Bowl title. If I had won Cal type money, then probably
Right.
not, but
Oh yeah. I
I'm happy for Saquon. Anybody who's not is an idiot.
I would definitely trade in the Super Bowl title that the Eagles just won for Cal type money. There's no That's an
Yes.
easy one. Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right, so one other big topic that we want to hit, a topic Jeff and I have covered a few times on previous episodes and with previous guests, prediction markets and operators like Kalshi, basically just diving right into sports betting. You recently wrote about this and where it's all headed, and you got a Breaking Bad quote into the headline. There's some more news that we just reported on with the new CFTC head coming from Kalshi to some extent. Any guess where this is headed?
Yeah, I mean that last little nugget, thanks to Jeff for posting that a few moments ago. What is the guy's name? Brian Quintez. He was previously commissioner during Trump's first term. My point is that his probable appointment makes it more likely that the CFTC is ultimately going to opine that sports is permissible. I don't know if they need to write a new regulation. I suppose that would have to come because some people smarter than me think that under the Commodity Exchange Act, as it currently exists, plainly doesn't allow the exist. The timing of it, I guess matters too, because the current acting chairman, Caroline Pham, she has both been hot and cold towards Kalshi. She's pointed to certain arguments that are difficult to reconcile. Basically, Kalshi saying that gaming is effectively sports betting, paraphrasing, combined with Donald Trump Jr. being some type of advisor to Cauchy, I would say it's minus 200 that Cauchy's going to walk away with this and their version of sports betting or sports events trading is going to be passable going forward, apparently, in all 50 states.
This is, I think, I've said it numerous times on this podcast. This is, this along with sweeps and all that, it's the biggest story of the year in gambling without question. I love to be a mole over there in Flutter or DraftKings because I have to assume that they are readying their own exchange, right? I mean, they'd be fools not to.
Industry everything, Chris Grove. I saw him post something on LinkedIn this morning. He believes that DraftKings and FanDuel Flutter will find a way to partner with the likes of Cauchy, somehow make this advantageous to them, and rather than the inverse, that this will cause some leakage into their markets. But I don't know. I have no way that no idea where this story is ultimately going. Like I said, minus 200 that I think Cauchy ultimately retains the right to continue doing what they're doing and they continue to push the envelope. But we'll see. I mean, I don't know if there's potentially state lawsuits, but it's been an interesting one to watch.
I feel like it just seems like this is has all of a sudden, like especially after today's news, that the exchanges have a much cleaner path than the sweepstakes people. Would you agree?
Yeah, because the sweeps are kind of operating on a state by state basis right now,
Right.
and mainly right now, defending lawsuits as well as bills that are proposing to ban the activity. Whereas I guess if Cauchy is successful during these roundtables and the ultimate determination, that would kind of be the end of it.
You
Of
know,
course.
we'd really know where Cauchy and everything stands if they put up a market on this.
They need to do that.
All
That'll be super meta.
right. I mean, it feels like
we're going to be looking at a lot of trial and error, which is what we've sort of seen already with it, but that sort of they throw a market up there and wait for the CFTC to say, yes, you can do that, or no, you can't. That it's just sort of this weird backwards approach of throwing something at the wall and seeing what you can get away with and backing down on it, like Robin Hood backing down, but I'm sure they'll come back with something soon. It feels like a long period of trial and error is what awaits us.
The review period was initiated late January. They should know and certainly ought to know that anything along the sports vein is tacitly not authorized, but while this is all pending, I guess it doesn't matter. I will note one thing that gaming attorney Evan Davis said in the story that I put out on Friday, and I agree with him. I don't think there's going to be a tremendous amount of overlap between people who might be betting through the exchanges on Cauchy or the likes of Robinhood. Maybe the more salient point is that I think that DraftKings and FanDuel are offering so many additional markets and props and same game parlays, the type of stuff that I can't fathom that Cauchy will be able to offer. That and parlays is where they make all their money. I certainly would not want the new competitor if I was one of the incumbents who's doing well, but I don't know. I just feel like there's kind of enough for everyone to eat.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's largely the exchange wagering is largely reaching a different customer and reaching customers in states that don't have sports betting, the handful that are still left. It seems like you're right that or I should say that Evan Davis is right, I guess, that the overlap is not huge, but that nevertheless, as Jeff was saying, FanDuel, DraftKings, et cetera, are going to want to get their piece of this pie too.
I guess I'll offer a counterpoint to my own point, and maybe there is great risk in that people who have substantial amount of money in their retail investing accounts are decide to make a large six-figure bet equivalent to like a money line bet. So I suppose that scenario where would be some pretty consequential leakage from the big guys.
All right. Well, it is a story that we will continue tracking probably as the main story throughout the year, as Jeff said. But good to get some of your insights here, Smiley. I will direct everyone toward your Blue Sky account. He's Brett Smiley on Blue Sky is a place to keep up with him, including your occasional haikus. Send everyone there, and thanks for making your debut on the podcast that you named.
Thank you, sir. Good to be with you, fellas.
Our thanks again to Brett Smiley. As you know, Jeff, I was on the fence about attending the Super Bowl party that we're invited to every year. I love it most years, but if the Eagles are in the game, I don't want non-football fans asking stupid questions. I don't want people talking loudly over the game about non-football stuff. I don't want to get shushed when the commercials come on. But my son and I decided to go. In the end, we opted for the communal experience with the caveat that we might drive home at halftime if we were unhappy. For the most part, it was great. I'm glad I watched this particular game in a party environment. There was almost no stress or anxiety, all good. But there was one thing that annoyed me, and it was gambling related. The hosts always have this pool that you fill out when you get there. You answer a bunch of questions: who's going to win the game? What'll the first penalty be? What'll the first commercial be? Etc. I didn't fill it out this year. I wanted nothing to do with it. One of the questions was, and this is on there every year, whether the coin flip would be heads or tails. And when the goddamn Chiefs won the goddamn coin flip, half the party erupted in cheers. Come on, we're in Philly. This is an Eagles party. The game hasn't started yet, and I'm already annoyed. Thankfully, that was the worst that it got. At no other point did I hear anyone cheering for their stupid pool over cheering for the Eagles. But that set me. I was like already calculating my exit from the party when everyone started cheering over the Chiefs winning the coin flip because they had it on their stupid pool.
Yeah, listen, gambling comes first. We all know this, you know.
Often I agree, not when my team is in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, my bad beat gambling. Sorry, I had Hollywood Brown on like 90% of my DFS teams. I loved him this week, and you know, 2 minutes left in the game or whatever, and he scores a touchdown, but it gets called back because Juju Smith shithead ran a moving pick. But seriously, if Hollywood scores there, I'm in. Like, I don't know exactly where I would have been, but I was definitely going to be in the top 100 in the $3 lottery. You know, so we're talking a few $1,000s. And he was the only Chief I had. It was all I had: Barkley, Hurts, Eagles defense, Elliott, and somebody else. You know, maybe, you know, he scores that touchdown. Maybe the Eagles hold on to the ball, don't go three and out. Maybe Worthy doesn't score two touchdowns. I had a hard fade on Worthy, like 10% of my rosters. You know, so I mean, I went from literally, you know, well, you know the story. I didn't win, and I'm guessing that this happened as because I got mad at Smiley for winning all his showdown, so it's like karma, like you know, a little retribution right there. But I really did. We all know I wasn't. I'm obviously happy for Smiley winning. I would have liked to win one. That's it. That's what I'm saying.
Next year. Next year's your year, Jeff.
Next
Or
year's my year.
UFL season.
Yeah, I love the UFL. But speaking of Juju Smith shithead and costing me some money, let me tell you one thing I didn't do. Okay, I didn't send Juju a death threat on Twitter, and I didn't call him names on social media. You know what? I didn't even at message him. Do you know why? I'll tell you why.
Yes.
Because I am a rational human being, something I fear we are in increasingly short supply of. You see this article in The Athletic, by the way?
I did not, no.
There was an article this week in The Athletic, a big takeout piece on the threats and the hate that athletes receive via social media on a daily basis. This is not breaking news. We know this has been going on,
Right.
but it's ugly nevertheless. This is like, why? I cannot believe people do this. So here's a modest proposal. If you happen to be one of the people who feel compelled to send hate mail and death threats through social media, please seek help. If you don't want to seek help, jump off a fucking bridge. Either way, knock it off. All right?
Yeah.
Come on. Until next week, we are Low Rollers, small stakes and hot takes.